Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast. Before we get to the fun, here's a quick word from one of our sponsors.
This episode of the Paleo Solution Podcast is sponsored by Sleep Cocktail.
So the number one factor to improving your sleep is to realize that you actually need to sleep, that you are human, you are mortal, and that nothing will break you faster than not sleeping, and nothing will improve your performance faster than sleeping well.
That's Dr. Kirk Parsley, sleep expert and former Navy SEAL. Dr. Parsley has been beating the sleep drum for years, first with the SEALs, and now to a much larger audience, trying to get the rest of us to understand just how important it is that we value our sleep.
Just convincing people that sleep is really, really important, and here's why. And you compare it to drunk driving, and you compare it to, you associate it with all of its disease risk. Like, you name any kind of Neolithic disease, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, you name it, sleep is a huge factor in that.
Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? Try Doc Parsley's sleep cocktail. Go to robwolf.com/sleepcocktail and use code ROBWOLF10 to save 10%.
Hey folks, Rob Wolf here, another edition of the Paleo Solution Podcast, recording today from the newly remodeled Lazy Lobo Ranch, so super excited. I am not squatting at the specialty health clinic in a broom closet recording these any longer, so that's kind of a bonus. Today's guest is a very good friend of mine, Andy Petranek. Andy has an incredible background ranging from military service, a vast training and movement experience background. He is the founder and owner of one of the very first CrossFit affiliates, CrossFit LA. He is also the co-founder of the Whole Life Challenge. And you are a crazy son of a gun when it gets down to these extreme endurance races, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm the former owner of CrossFit LA. I've got to add.
Which we'll talk about that.
I set that bag of I don't know, that backpack down about a year ago.
Nice.
So it's been a good relief.
Well, how are you doing?
Doing great. I was just telling you before the podcast, you know, my son's back to school. And
how old is he again?
Today he's nine.
He's nine. Wow.
So he's in
fourth
grade.
Wow.
Yeah. So that and everything, September is like the start of a new year for me. So that soccer starts. Usually it's baseball. We're not doing baseball this year because he's on an all-star soccer team and I'm coaching. And so that's going to be a big, it's going to be a big time suck and fun. I mean, I'm not complaining. It's very, very fun.
it's always funny when
it's a part-time job. It's a total part-time job. Maybe even a full. Tonight I have 3.5 hours of referee training to go to
from 6
to 9:30. So it's there's a lot.
I used to think that I was busy until we had kids, and now I realize that I just farted around a lot. And
my wife and I have this joke that there are people with kids and there are people that don't have kids, and they can't, the people that don't have kids cannot relate to time the way people with kids do.
No,
it's just impossible. You can talk and try to explain until you're blue in the face, and they won't get it.
No.
I go through that with my sister.
And there's got to be some sort of an evolutionary switch that gets flipped in your brain that makes all of that seem like a good idea. Because in any reasonable assessment, it's like, why on earth would I have kids? This is, you know, financially, time wise. But
right.
It's crazy.
No, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Awesome. But it's definitely different than it was.
Yeah.
So.
Andy, I know everybody who follows this podcast likely knows you and your story, but if there's two or three people that don't know about you,
there are two or three that don't know.
Possibly. But you give them your background. Like, you've just done some amazing stuff. You had military experience. You have a really, really massive background in strength and conditioning and various movement modalities. Like, walk people through all that stuff.
It's funny, you know, you started with the Marines or the military service. And before that, I mean, it's funny. It really starts before that. When I was 5, I picked up the trumpet. Mm. And I played the trumpet from 5 till 18.
Wow.
And I went to Eastman. I actually got accepted into the Eastman School of Music, which is kind of like one of the top schools in the country for trumpet. And then I decided that that's enough music for now. I need to drink beer and chase women and have fun in college and not be too serious. And so that's what I did.
So you're telling me you should have done guitar instead of trumpet, and then you could have continued both of them.
Maybe. I wonder. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I probably could have done the drink beer and chase women with the trumpet, because people definitely have done that.
Right.
But I didn't see the connection so well.
Nikki likes trumpet players. She likes trumpet. So you know,
Chris Bode is the kind of the heartthrob trumpet player now that a lot of people know about. Kind of a pop trumpet player.
So what do you feel like that music, that really deep music education, did for you over the long haul? How did that kind of?
It's funny. I think about that quite a bit. You know, the level of discipline, the level of kind of commitment, the method of practice, you know, like how to practice, and, you know, the meticulous detail that you had to work on something over and over and over and over and over again until you got it down and you could play it perfectly. Those definitely have served me. I don't think I ever literally tied my progress in life specifically to music. Like, I don't think now, this is just like I used to practice the Haydn trumpet concerto, you know, back 30 years ago. But as I think about those real basic fundamental skills that I learned, they definitely apply. It's just become part of my, you know, fabric in my, in my life, in the way I think.
Well, and I'm going to have an interesting segue on that, because you have this, highly disciplined music background, which really lends itself to incremental progression. And there's really, you know, people can kind of plug into it different ways. But I mean, music education is a bit scientifically approached. And then you entered the military, specifically the Marines, which they have a very dot the I, cross the T, detail oriented kind of process.
Think so?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, just slightly. Yes. It's the OCD wing of the military.
Right.
And then CrossFit has this really interesting element to it of this, you know, 80% good, 20% slop. Like, there's been all kinds of drama and gnashing of teeth around all that type of stuff. But, you know, what drew you to CrossFit? And then how did this background, for me, the detail orientation and this need for progression and a bit of planning and triage and stuff like that, it sent me on kind of a parallel or perpendicular vector to, I think, most of where CrossFit land has gone over time. I'm curious how, you know, what drew you to CrossFit, and then how did this background with this really disciplined approach to training yourself in two different, you know, multiple disciplines, really, when you get down to it, how did that inform your kind of coaching CrossFit?
I think, you know, when I think about, it's a really good question. You know, I think that the specificity of CrossFit, I do very well when somebody hands me a guidebook. And it's not that I can't operate outside the guidebook, because I was kind of known for doing that when I was a Marine. And, but I'm very good when somebody hands me a book with the rules, and here are the rules. And as long as I have flexibility outside the rules to be creative and do my own thing, my own way, if I feel boxed in or trapped, I will rebel. I don't do well when I only can do things this way. And for me, it was interesting. It's interesting that I described the Marines that way, because a lot of people might describe the Marines as you can only do things this way.
Mm-hmm.
But I found a lot of flexibility and freedom in my leadership style and my getting things done style that gave me kind of that room to express myself, my individuality, and kind of the way I like to do things. It's probably also the reason I got out, because I felt like, you know, after 4 years, I had really done the job that I got in to do, be a platoon commander, be in a small unit, you know, be on the ground, you know, with the people doing the job rather than being in the man, you know. As you get higher in the Marines, the more you pull away from the guys in the trenches, to become a more of a leader of, you're deciding things strategically and tactically rather than the guy on the ground. And I like being the guy on the ground.
Right. Right.
And so I think that, you know, my training with Paul Cech was very similar. He had a rule book. He had kind of, this is the way you do it. And then there's room to, you know, bring in the elements that you want to bring in. And I think the same thing with CrossFit. You know, the thing I think that really drew me to CrossFit was the boundless capacity for kind of your boundless capacity for fitness. Mm-hmm. You know, for you, there was no limit and it was testable. I really liked that it was testable, and I had never really seen fitness in a test presented in a testable format prior to 2004. You know, that was a radical, other than a 5K or 3K. I guess that's not true totally. You know, the Marine Corps tests fitness. How many pull-ups can you do?
The O course and stuff like that.
The O course. Yeah. How many pull-ups can you, how many sit-ups can you do in 2 minutes? You know, how long does it take you to run 3 miles? But it's different. You know, everything was testable in CrossFit, and for a reason. There were whys. You know, why does Olympic weightlifting fit into the equation, and why does gymnastics, why bother doing things that are more than just you know, push-ups and sit-ups? So I think that those fit really well for me. I hadn't really put those together before, but I think that's probably the thing that pulled me in so readily, so quickly.
Nice. Nice. So how did that, what was the impetus from first getting exposed to CrossFit to actually wanting to open a brick and mortar location? You were the ninth affiliate to come online now out of, you know, 10, 15,000 affiliates that have popped up globally. What was kind of that process where you decided, okay, yeah, I want to open a facility?
It was quick. I mean, you know, I discovered it in like March of 2004, and I was just perusing the website. I was thinking about how people were training clients online, and I was doing online research, and I remember going to the CrossFit site and looking for the paid part. Where's the behind the firewall part? You pay $9.99 a month, and you know, you get the workouts, and you get. It never dawned on me that it's right on the homepage for free. You know, like. It took me like 3 hours to find the workout of the day, which had been right in front of me from the start. I just decided, what the hell, I'm going to try a workout. And that was kind of the miracle for me, is I was willing to give something that was kind of crazy. Nobody had ever heard of, I mean, literally nobody had ever heard of,
right,
a try. Nobody anywhere in Los Angeles knew what I was doing or talking about. And I had never met Coach Glassman or Lauren or any of the crew up in Santa Cruz. I just decided to give it a shot. And I did it for about a month and a half, and I it was working so well that I'm like, I gotta go meet this guy. You know, he's not that far away. I'll drive up the coast. And, you know, I think it was before the first seminar I went to was 3 days, and it was, I think there were 12 of us or 10 of us there. I think six of us were actual newbies, and the other six had been, you know, were kind of tag-alongs who trained at CrossFit Santa Cruz.
Right, right.
Who they wanted to kind of fill the space.
Right.
And, you know, they threw Fran at us. They threw Ficon Bad at us. It was very informal. It was very fun. And I had a conversation with Lauren that weekend, and she said, Andy, you know, I'm just telling you, this is going to blow up into something. And it wasn't that she said that. It was that I somehow that weekend saw that here was a way for me to take this private training business that I had and have a real effective system and a profoundly influential system immediately. Like, I could, cause I already did, it was so much in alignment with what I was already doing. It just, I'd never systematized my thoughts, and then here Coach had systematized basically all my thoughts around fitness. And then they had the example of CrossFit Santa Cruz. I mean, that was my, I basically took mental and physical pictures of the place and did everything I could to replicate it in Santa Monica. And, in December I opened. I mean, I had to find the place, but it was very quick. I affiliated almost immediately after the seminar, and, I just knew. And it was funny how it all happened, and how, you know, people in the in the world thought I was pretty nuts. My family, my clients, I lost a couple clients because they, you know, really wanted more of the gentle Andy.
Right.
And I basically made a commitment that if you were coming into my CrossFit gym, you would do CrossFit. And that was confronting for a lot of people. But I just saw the bigger picture. And fortunately, I saw the bigger picture. And, you know, it was just the first couple of years were a struggle. But I've kind of operated my life that way. I'm all in, you know, which is why I recently sold the gym. And you know, so to give myself room, I'm a kind of a one-trick pony. And I'd like to be all in. I put all my eggs in one basket for better or for worse. And I put all my eggs into the whole life challenge. And, you know, once it was capable of supporting me, financially, I was like, okay, time to go.
Right. Well, burn the boats has been an effective strategy for possibly thousands of years, you know, depending on what the activity is. So that totally makes sense. What do you feel like were the greatest challenges that you had running the gym, and then maybe some deep insights that you'll carry with you, you know, in other activities throughout your life?
The biggest challenges for me, the ones that caused me the most anxiety, were dealing with the city, dealing with the neighbors, dealing with my landlord. There was nothing that struck more pain in my stomach. Like I can even feel the pain right now as we're talking about it. It's this just because I felt like it was out of my control. Like I couldn't, you know, somebody was going to shut me down,
right?
You know, in spite of the license, in spite of, you know, somebody was going to go out and complain to a neighbor, and the neighbor was going to raise hell and my gym would get shut down, or the Sioux. There was one morning when I got a frantic call from one of my coaches. There was sewage, raw sewage, pumping out of the water fountain in the main gym, like shooting out of it, 3 feet high, like flowing out. And he's trying to teach class at 6 o'clock in the morning. He's bailing the sewage with a bucket while he's teaching class at the other end of the gym. stuff like that. I'm so relieved that I don't have to deal with anymore.
You know what's hilarious about that is that I've met a ton of people that own gyms, and the raw sewage came from somewhere story is like,
is that normal?
10 or 15% of people that I've met, you know, wow. It's like, oh yeah, the restaurant upstairs, the toilets broke, and we had raw sewage coming dripping through the ceiling, or you know what, whatever it is. I've never heard that it came out of a water fountain before, but the CrossFit.
Well, it was the lowest. You know, it came from the city. It came from a backed up pipe from the city line, and it was the lowest exit point, basically, for lack of a better word.
We have no bathrooms, basically. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, we have no bathrooms on the first floor, so it wasn't going to go up there. It was going to go to the first exit, and the first exit was the drain line on the water fountain. So,
awesome.
Yeah, it was gnarly. But things like that, you know, just so good to be, you know, that, yeah, those were the biggest sources of stress. I mean, I think from the standpoint of like running a CrossFit gym in terms of the business itself, the biggest challenge was figuring out a way to replicate myself and learn how to really run a business that didn't rely solely on me to do everything. That was a huge process, and one that I couldn't do myself. I actually got help. I hired a guy to help me like figure out how to do that, a consultant. And and I think that's probably one of the things that I take from that. It was really a training ground, a proving ground for me to learn the difference between me just having a job and owning a job, which I think a lot of personal trainers, they say they run a business, but they don't run a business because the moment they stop working, the money shuts off. You know, the difference between owning a job and owning a business. And that for me was probably the biggest distinction that, and the biggest thing I continuously worked on for 12 years was, you know, developing coaches and finding new people and figuring out new innovative ways to bring new people on and to allow them to lead and to manage and to let them fall on their, you know, fall on their dicks, or, you know, or so to speak, and make mistakes. And, you know, it's not the end of the world. They don't necessarily get fired, but they have to know that they're accountable for those mistakes.
Right.
And, those lessons will definitely, you know, follow me, whatever I do going forward.
Did, you know, it's funny, like we had ourselves dealing with our own gym, and then we've just met so many people that have had pretty harrowing experiences with the city, with neighbors, you know, like one day you're in business, the next day you're potentially not in business, or you're in a battle for your life. We have a good friend who has a business. I'm not going to go into it super heavy duty details, but basically some sort of state level governmental agency has now intervened in his business, basically sent this person a cease and desist letter. Oh. And this person may be out of not just out of business, but bankrupt here in about 12 to 15 days. Like there's major legal, you know, shaking going on. And this is some of the stuff that really makes me crazy about governmental overreach. And, you know, some of the folks out there like talking about that, some don't, but it's any type of business activity now, you know, historically when something has, you know, either I have an idea or somebody floats an idea towards me, I'm like, wow, is that interesting? Will it help people? Am I passionate about it? That to some degree has given way to a whole like legal fiduciary process of who could try to screw me on this,
right.
What's the downside potential? And it's kind of a buzzkill at this point, you know, because passion has kind of given way, not entirely, but really looking at downside potential, because I've seen some people just put through the ringer, you know, from different governmental stuff intervening and potentially putting them out of business overnight. And it'll be interesting to see how this one friend navigates things, and the activity that this person does dramatically improves the world. And for whatever reason now, you know, again, some governmental agency is potentially going to like basically curb stomp this individual. But the activities that you do now, like because of that potential for governmental oversight and reach into what you're doing, where does that play out in your thinking when you're doing an activity? Like with the whole life challenge, it seems like that's reasonably insulated, but
I can feel it literally in my gut when you're talking about it. Like that pain of that fear, that threat of literally going out of existence I don't think I ever let go of that that was government, it was landlord, it was city, it was neighbors, it was I had probably a year long feud with my landlord about my renewal rate. And, you know, she came in at one price, I came in at another price. The lease didn't spell out what to do in case of a conflict. And it was a old fashioned standoff. And, you know, I don't remember really one night being able to go to sleep peacefully without some like, what's going to happen?
Right.
Where's my business going to be? Cause I didn't know where else to go. It's not like there's a plethora of places in Santa Monica to open up a gym.
No, I remember you talking about that, and that was kind of where you guys were, lucky and clearly there's challenges with it, but there was such little, you know, acreage available to do something like that. Like you guys had a pretty good buffer there for quite a long time. Yeah. I know that the guys had opened, the CrossFit New York had kind of a similar deal where, you know, that Manhattan area, there just really wasn't any place that you could do something like this for a very long time.
Yep. Yeah. And I think some of the people that have opened up places have figured out ways to get around some of the restrictions and rules. You know, there's still not a lot of CrossFit gyms specifically in Santa Monica. There are probably four now and they're four or five, which is still a lot compared to what it was. But there's a lot in West LA and right on the other side of the border.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole
mm-hmm.
different story. But you know, with the, you know, your question about now, how does it affect me? You know, the whole challenge doesn't have a lot of that present because there isn't a physical, at least not that I know of. I mean, I don't know of any governmental rules or restrictions or regulations that could, you know, quote unquote, shut us down.
Right.
Or prevent us from doing what we're doing. It's interesting. I hadn't really even thought of that. Rob, you just screwed me, dude.
God. Well, that's just where you incorporate in Singapore and you know, you just have to stay one step ahead. But the whole life challenge has just been incredibly successful. Tell folks what that is and where did you come up with the idea for this program? Clearly, this was an outgrowth of just running your brick and mortar location and understanding that a dedicated nutrition and lifestyle kind of focus change is really beneficial for folks. But flesh out that whole story.
Well, it's an interesting story. You know, I was never trying to create the Whole Life Challenge when we created the Whole Life Challenge. I mean, it was 2011, 2010. We actually went to the very first attempt. No, I think there have been multiple attempts by CrossFit to do nutrition certifications, but this was the most recent at the time. Dave Castro invited me down to San Diego to go, and I brought two of my coaches, and we went to this thing, and they were addressing blood things and blood testing, and they did a lot of great stuff in the seminar, but we came away from it not so inspired by that particular certification, but we came away inspired to do something for our clients. Like we have to address these things because these things are bigger than your workout in the gym. And these things have the potential to affect your life in unbelievably profound ways. You know, the choices you make when you're not in the gym. And, you know, about whether it's your sleep or your food or your stretching or the amount of water you drink or the quality of your sleep, you know, the quality of your bedroom and your, you know, all that stuff. And then the way you think and process. So we had been doing, I started this thing back in, before I even knew what CrossFit was, called the Petronic Fitness Challenge. It was an 8-week game that I played between all my clients. I can't remember exactly how much it cost. I think I charged like $500 per person for it. And they got, it was like an Olympics. It was a 10 event thing. One day was in the gym and one day was at the track. And they would set marks in each one of these events, the 10 events. And they would do it independently. They would do it in their training sessions. And then over the 8 weeks, we would train for those, you know, achievement in those 10 things. But they were brought together as a community by this competition. They were all competing against each other, which made it kind of fun. And so I'd been doing this for a long time, these fitness challenges. And so the idea popped into our heads, well, what if we were able to combine these lifestyle and these elements that you do outside the gym in with an 8-week challenge or a 10-week challenge or whatever, however long the challenge was. And I left out an important piece. Prior to that, we thought the solution to this nutrition piece was to create a nutrition program. And we did, we called Food U. Michael, my partner, Michael Stanwyck, created it. And it was a stepping stone, but it was a huge failure. You know, we had, it was a great educational program, but people don't come to the gym for education, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't come to listen to somebody talk. You know, there were way too many requirements. It was more like going to school. We started with 12 or 15 people and we finished with 3, you know, it just wasn't enrolling. It wasn't fun. It didn't make a difference. And so we took elements of that and we put it together with this fitness challenge idea, and we came up with a Whole Life Challenge. And we we dialed it into, and I don't remember what it was 4.5, 5 years ago, but today it's 7 daily habits. It's nutrition, it's exercise, it's mobility, it's drinking water, it's sleeping, it's lifestyle practices, which is things like meditation and gratitude and disconnecting from electronics, and it's reflecting. And we put it together in a game-like format where you would each day of the challenge. Fortunately, we had a couple software developers as clients, and they talked us off the ledge of using a Google Doc for this whole thing, which would have been a disaster. they built our first platform for doing this. And because part of my intention, there were two real big intentions. Number one, give my clients the ability to see the impact that their choices every day in their life make on their regular life, on their health and their well-being in their life. And the second was do it in a way that didn't cause me to have to do an incredible amount of administrative work, which for every challenge we had run up to that point was an incredible amount of administrative work. If there was any nutrition involved, it involved checking food logs. It involved, you know, one-on-one coaching and handholding, and it was a nightmare. There was no real community aspect. And so the software, the website allowed us to do that. It created this online community because we suddenly people could talk to each other outside of their time in the gym. It got people empowered to start making decisions for themselves and to stop relying on us to tell them what to do. The challenge told them what to do. Like, we didn't tell them what to do. And then they would have to solve their problems. You know, they would have to go out and figure out how to do this. And then, so then they started talking to each other about how to solve problems together. And then they created like food groups, and they created, you know, potlucks, and they created, you know, meetings to meet and work out on their own, because, you know, one of the requirements of the challenge was 10 minutes of exercise a day. And it just had this profound, you know, kind of earth-changing effect on the community. And we thought, there's no way we cannot repeat this. So the next year we did it again. We got our developers to build it in a way where they could invite their friends and family, and even more stories, very similar stories, people that would never, ever do CrossFit suddenly were participating in a, you know, it's not CrossFit, but in an event with their friends that do CrossFit, or with their family that does CrossFit. And then we decided that this is too good to not share with the rest of the world. And we partnered with John Birch, who, you know, we had started this consulting business together, but it's since parted ways. And John's group became our first kind of worldwide litmus test for a challenge. And we had 7,000 people in that first challenge. And it was an accidental, you know, it was a great accident. I mean, John wouldn't say it was an accident. I mean, he's very intentional. He's very enrolling. He got his group to participate at a very high level, but we didn't really know what impact that would have.
Right.
And it basically gave us our foothold. And you know, it just somehow we hit on this thing, and we speak about it in a way that puts it in a context that's completely different from what most people have ever done before around challenges. You know, most people say, I've done a challenge. I did a boot camp. I've done that before. I know what this is. And I usually start that conversation with, well, no, you really don't. It's nothing like that. And although it addresses similar issues, the idea is that it's slow, continuous, gentle progress that allows you to sustain that progress over the 8 weeks and then beyond the 8 weeks, not to try to be perfect, not to try to get the perfect score, not to try to beat your friends. Although that part's fun. The
gamification. Points, yeah.
The gamification is fun. It's there for the fun part. We don't give away prizes. But really the point of the challenge is to help you create context and purpose and accountability for making very small changes that over time will lead to very big changes in your overall health and well-being.
Right.
And so it is very different than, you know, it's not the Tough Mudder or the Spartan race or the 4-week boot camp. Like, I'd say if that's the way you approach it, you're missing the point.
Andy, I've noticed that, you know, we always want to simplify where people plug into different processes. And, you know, like in my gym, I tended to do a fairly hard line in the sand of do this thing the way I tell you, 30 days, don't argue, don't bitch, just do it. And then at the end of 30 days, you can look back, assess your progress, figure out if, you know, the cost benefit ratio is appealing to you. Oftentimes people would say, well, is there a way I can kind of sneak up on this? Like, I'll just quit drinking soda or whatever. I'm like, yeah, you can do that. But I don't know if I was a jerk. I don't know if I was failing people, but, my approach was really to hold folks' feet to the fire, get that really profound compliance. And it, part of it may have been laziness because the people that complied got really, really good success. Yep. The people that didn't peeled out and I didn't have to deal with them. But, you know, how does the whole life challenge address that? Like, because clearly people do succeed, whether they go into it, Mach 10, hair on fire, really get a profound change, then they're able to make it stick. And then also people say, you know what, I'm just going to stop drinking soda. And they do that for a month and they're like, wow, I lost 10 pounds just not drinking soda. Maybe I'm going to cut out white carbs now. And then, you know, and there's kind of a stepwise process. How do you guys address these two kind of ways of plugging into these processes?
It's a great question. You know, we started off more the Mach 10 back when we first did the first whole life challenge. There were no levels. It was basically a paleo. It was a close to paleo. We allowed sweet potatoes. We allowed beans. But over the years, you know, one of my intentions in my life of coaching and whatnot is to be able to help people of all levels, not just people that are willing to, you know, go at Mach 10 and strip everything away from their life. And, you know, the strong survive and the weak fail. And they'll, you know, I can affect the people that are willing to be strong enough to make it. I've always wanted to work and help a lot of people. And I started thinking about my father-in-law, who at the time was in not great health. He was overweight. He was terrible, you know, pretty regular bad habits. He described his diet as pretty good, which is the way most people.
Which is hilarious and
pretty
always,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. You're doomed. So, oh, it's pretty good. It's like, oh, it's complete dog shit.
I eat pretty well. I mean, how often have you heard that, Rob?
Right. Every single time. Only like one out of tens of thousands of people has somebody looked at me and they're like, yeah, I eat like a cockroach and I'm owning that, you know?
Right. Yeah. I started thinking, what would I tell him if I wanted him to do the whole life challenge, how would I get him? Cause the other parts of the whole life challenge, you know, they're very docile. The 10 minutes of exercise a day, 10 minutes of stretching a day, although they require some work and some time, they're not hard in the context of hard. In fact, some of the people that have done the whole life challenge are like, can't we get more points for doing more? Like, what if I do 20 minutes or what if I do an hour? Can I get like 6 points for that or 12 points or, you know, triple? And, you know, really, no, not in the whole life challenge. Certainly you get credit for it. Your body will give you credit for it. And your, you know, your results will speak for themselves. But, you know, we're trying to build habits that are sustainable and it's not about quantity or difficulty.
Right.
So I started thinking about my father-in-law and I thought, what would make a difference for him? And I came up with five things. I said, okay, if we got rid of the beer, we got rid of the pasta, we got rid of the bread, we got rid of the, let's see, it was beer and soda. That was one category. It was pasta and bread was another category. If we got rid of the cheese, if we got rid of the desserts and can't like after dinner dessert and candy. And there's one more that I'm forgetting.
Man, he really was eating like a cockroach.
But if you think about it,
the only thing you're leaving off is like hookers and cocaine. Like it's like, well, we left those in because exercise is stimulant. So
I think it's very easy for us on the, you know, I don't know if it's the West Coast or California or just in the industry to lose sight of
just how poorly people eat.
Just how poorly regularly people eat. I mean, think of Top Ramen. How many people in the world live on Top Ramen?
Right.
You know, literally live on Top Ramen. It's insane.
Right.
And then they describe their diet as pretty good. You know, it's that's insane as well. But so I so that was basically what we decided. Let's make a level that we call the Kickstart level and let people start there so that they don't, because the other thing that with a challenge is it's all about points, right? So each day you start with 5 points, and for every infraction of a rule on the level that you choose, you lose a point. Well, you could make the argument that everybody should just be at the top level and just fine, just lose points. Like, it's okay. They're just points. People don't like to lose points.
Right.
And
right.
It's so like, if you start the challenge off and you're in the performance, the top level, and every day you lose 5 points and you lose all your points, you're at zero every day for like 2 weeks. There's a very high likelihood you just quit. Like, you just, fuck this. Like, I can't do it. You right. know, it's just demoralizing. It'd be like walking into an MMA gym when you have never worked out for 3 years. Like, maybe some people would survive it, but not very many.
Right.
So we decided to make this level where people could keep their points. They would make good decisions around these very basic areas and take that step in changing their life. And you know what's funny is now that's the level I play. I play the Kickstart level, but I eat basically performance, but I don't want to lose the points.
So you are gaming your own system.
I'm gaming my own system. Nice. I tell people that. I'm like, this is a great option for you. You know, then I can drink a glass of wine every day and not lose a point for it. And because at the performance level, there's no wine, there's no alcohol, there's no soda, there's no beer, there's no spirits, nothing. And that doesn't work for me all the time.
Right.
So, and I don't want to lose points. I fall right into that category. I do not want to lose points every day for these stupid things. So, yeah, that's kind of how we've addressed it. We're like progress, not perfection. And if you're making progress, then we love it.
Right.
You know?
Right. That's fantastic. Andy, when is the next Whole Life Challenge occurring? And then where on the interwebs can people track that down? We will have this in the show notes also.
Yeah. We operate it as an event. So right. we only offer it 3 times a year. The next one's on September 17th. We do the one after that is in January, we do 3 a year, May, September, and January. So the next one is September 17th and it's wholelifechallenge.com. We also provide a ton of content that for people that don't ever engage in the Whole Life Challenge, because you have to pay for it. You know, like that's the other interesting thing about the challenge is, there are not very many nutrition or fitness challenge type apps or wellness programs that are not free.
Mm-hmm.
They're all free. You download this thing and you get everything for free and you get all these things for free. What my experience is if I really want somebody to change, they've got to pay for it.
Right.
They got to pay for coaching. They got to pay for the membership at the gym. And if they're not changing, they usually need to pay more because they're not committed enough. There's not enough skin in the game. So, it's not expensive. Our price is $49. There's early registration. It's $39. But some people ask, well, where's the money go? You know, well, we're a business, and we
it goes to the government, of course. It like 50% of everything
half
that
of it,
everybody
half of it
makes.
Goes to the government.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the rest of it, we're not getting rich off it. That's for sure. Not yet. Anyway, if we had 1 million players, maybe.
Right.
But, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Andy, where else can folks track down information about you specifically on the interwebs?
Well, I'm on Facebook. I do my best to do multiple of social media stuff. Like I'm on Twitter at Andy Petronic. I'm on Facebook at Andy Petronic. I'm very uncreative with my names. I'm on Instagram at Andy Petronic. I'm trying out Snapchat, but I'll do it for a week and then lose track of it. So I'm not so.
Yeah, I'm neither snapping nor chatting myself.
Neither of the above. And sometimes I go through these moments of I need to just get off of these things.
Right.
But then I think, well, I gotta keep my presence. I want to keep my presence. I like talking to people but
it just gets to be a bit much though. You're kind of like, what should I be doing here? And is this helping anybody?
Is this the best use of time?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You've got to go through that. I mean, you've got a massive audience and people you've got to be pulled in 27 directions. How do you keep all that together?
You know, it is my job. So like, you know, people will ping me a private message on Facebook and I actually reply to it in addition to the other 50 private messages. They're like, wow, I really didn't expect a response. And I'm like, well, this isn't actually a popularity contest for me. This is my job. I try to help people. If I help people, then usually they buy a book or go to a seminar or something. And so there's some reciprocity there. So, you know, it is funny, but, you know, sometimes I know Instagram, like it's a little different than Facebook. It's really not so content driven. It's much more just kind of pictures and videos. And I just can't imagine anybody being interested. Like I can still do front levers and back levers. I've almost got a one arm chin again and stuff like that.
Wow.
But that's just so pedestrian compared to what you can find on the internet. I'm like, does anybody really care to see me do a front lever?
I subscribe to Gymnastic Body's Instagram feed and oh my God. I mean, it's in one way it's inspiring. You know, there's a 54-year-old guy and I'm almost 50. So in some ways I'm inspired by this. Like, wow, maybe I could do that at some point. Maybe. At the same time, it's like, are you kidding me?
Right.
Are you kidding me? You see that video that's been going around of that guy doing the one arm handstand?
Yes.
And moving back and forth. And,
yeah. I posted that and I'm like, so clearly this guy is on Mars. So we have no
gravity.
Populated exactly. Mars. Yeah. It's like one quarter gravity. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It was insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And that has largely chased me off of posting anything workout related. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I do it when I work out with my son because it's kind of fun.
But
if it comes to like me trying to take myself seriously, like forget about it. I'm not serious at anything.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know.
What are you doing these days for workouts and stuff? Are you
mainly following the Gymnastics Body stuff and then doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu 2 to 4 days a week. And I will deadlift or hip bridge or front squat once every 10 days or so. And that seems to supplement the kind of lower body overload that I'm not really getting out of the Gymnastics Body stuff. And
when you do that strength stuff, do you do like sets of five? What are you doing?
I tend to work up to a heavy triple. And by heavy, I'm still getting the reps done in less than a second. Like there's no grind to it at all. But it's basically I work up to a level where if I added 5 more pounds, it would be a little grindy. And then, so I work up to that. It's kind of a Bulgarian deal, but I work up to kind of a heavy triple and then I'll back it off and do, you know, anywhere from 3 to 8 sets to get a little volume on that. And it kind of depends on the day. And I've done enough powerlifting and enough lifting over the course of time that seems to be a good maintenance deal. Like I'm not setting any new records or anything, but I've got plenty of pop for jiu-jitsu. It's super time efficient, and I tend to do the Gymnastics Bodies throughout my workday. I'll do 25 minutes of writing, working on the book, and then pop up and do my next block of Gymnastics Bodies stuff. And
those Gymnastics Bodies workouts are tough.
They're no joke. They are no joke. Because you look at it, and there's really typically not that much volume to it. But if you really do it to standard, you're like, okay, I just had a diamond roll out of my short leg.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. I'm working on the frog. The straight armed frog hold, frog stand hold, you know, frog stand with bent elbows. So this is the straight arm version of that. And then the mobility, quote unquote mobility, because some of them are not mobility. I hate to tell you, Coach Sommer, not that he's listening to this. Maybe he is. It's the mobility piece is the bent arm straddle planche.
Right.
Like, how is that mobility?
Right.
That one, I feel like my eyeballs are about to pop out of my head. It's a 10-second hold. When I first tried to do it, I couldn't even, I just kind of laughed at myself. I can't do this and I'm not going to be able to do this. And now I can do it. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been really digging that and it seems to work well for jiu-jitsu, keeps a decent amount of muscle mass on me. And the mobility pieces, when it is actually strength and mobility, I feel like my body, you know, just feels good relative to just lifting weight. So I've really been digging that, but I've got to say, like, you've got to be really comfortable with glacial progress. Like
you
just get in and you, you put the time in and you're like, I have no idea if I made any forward progress at all. You know,
Will that algorithm take me to step 7?
Right.
I've been on step 6 for 6 weeks or 7. Like, when will it move me up?
Yeah. So you have to be really comfortable with that. If you are, you have to find stimulation elsewhere, put it that way. That's where you just get in a Zen state and just log the mileage. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I like that and I don't like that. So, you know, I'm motivated by training for something rather than just like, you know, a good buddy of mine does Orange Theory.
Mm-hmm.
And, to me, Orange Theory is just fitness for fitness's sake.
Right.
And I really like, and that's probably another thing that pulled me into the CrossFit place is it's training for something.
Right.
You're actually doing something, you're progressing towards something. There's something you have to journal and log because it's makes a difference where you are, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of where, you know, jiu-jitsu is kind of my, I guess, testing ground at this point. And so everything I'm doing is to kind of support that and to make it better while not putting any type of recovery inroads that are going to limit the amount of jiu-jitsu I can do. Like if I manage to fit in 5 days of jits in a week, then everything else gets curtailed to accommodate that. So that's kind of where I've oriented all this stuff to be supportive of the jiu-jitsu activity and not taken away from it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, Andy, it's been a hoot having you on. Are you doing any traveling or are you going to be out on the road anytime soon?
I am, you know, not officially.
Okay.
I don't have any, you know, tours or I don't have a book or the book is still in the thinking stage.
Okay.
I got a lot to say, but I haven't done any writing yet.
Okay.
I like to make my way around to different places that are doing the Whole Life Challenge. So I may be informally traveling around and I was at the Paleo FX convention. In fact, did you see, you get the Paleo FX magazine?
Yes. Yeah.
There's a picture in the middle of it of me and Sarah Ballantyne at that first day.
I remember seeing that.
Great shot in the middle of it. Logan posted. I actually hadn't got a subscription to the magazine. And so I emailed him and I'm getting a subscription.
Nice.
I forgot I need to post that.
Yeah.
But it was a very funny picture.
Very cool.
So I may be at I'm sure I'll see you or people around.
Okay. Well, awesome, Andy. Well, we will have links to all the Whole Life Challenge information in the show notes and look forward to seeing you in real life again.
Sounds cool. Me too, Rob.
All right, Andy. Take care, man.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.